Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We wish Carlos and his family the best moving forward, and we hope that everyone can go on to future success that's involved in the Mets family and Carlos as well. We believe, and Jeff and I mentioned this in our release earlier this afternoon, we truly do believe that this will not be the final chapter in Carlos's baseball career.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
New York Mets general manager Brody Van Wagenen referring to Jeff Wilpon, the owner and chairman of the New York Mets, as they become the third team this week to part ways with their manager. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We are pleased to welcome former Astro World Series champ, longtime baseball slugger, and current Houston Astros TV analyst, Jeff Blum, to the show. And Jeff, I know this has been a crazy week for you as someone who's with the organization, so I do appreciate some time and as always, your perspective. Let's start with the most recent news on Thursday that Carlos Beltran has been fired by the Mets. He was a part of the Astros World Series team. I'm a little stunned about it. What is your reaction?
To be brutally honest, you know, I'm upset about the Carlos Beltran situation, and not just because the New York Mets opted to part ways and have a mutual agreement, both parties understanding that it would be a distraction. But I want to go back to why it was a distraction. I think it was a little bit, Carlos Beltran at the time, like you were saying, with the Houston Astros in 2017, he was not on that roster to be a player coach. He was on that roster to be a player. And yes, he was in the clubhouse to be a mentor and get these guys to understand how to play championship baseball. Obviously, it spiraled out of control a little bit. But at the same time, everything that I've heard from anybody in baseball management or anybody on the commissioner's side is players were to have immunity in order to get the story out and get the evidence they needed to figure out what was going on. So my question to the commissioner would be, why was Carlos Beltran mentioned in that report? He was a player in 2017. It shouldn't have an effect on him. He should still be covered by that blanket immunity for players. But now with him being named in that report, more speculation builds and it thwarts the opportunity to have a very good player, a very good man, I still believe, have the opportunity to manage a good team up in New York. It's frustrating.
So if he hadn't have been named, so presumably he still keeps his job with the Mets. My question about the situation, though, is why the Mets felt like they needed to part ways with him. In your opinion, will this die down, or do you think this would have remained a distraction all the way through the season?
I'm not sure, to be honest with you, because I'm wondering how it can die down. And part of me being an ex-player and being in the Major League Baseball Union, I'm having trouble watching and listening and seeing the Twitter exchanges between players who are represented by the same union. It's not something I'm accustomed to. So there's a little bit of concern for that for me. So I don't see it dying down anytime soon. It really feels like, oh, well, so-and-so did this. Well, did you hear about this person? And I mean, we've got some serious high school drama going on as far as who's pointing fingers and putting blame on other people around the league. It's kind of scary.
You're a former player. It's certainly a fraternity, and we've heard some people come out and point the finger at Mike Fiers and say this never should have been public. He shouldn't have aired his grievances to the media. Where do you stand on that?
I'm not sure how it – I'm kind of curious. I would be curious to hear Mike Fiers' story on how it kind of started or how it became public and how it got to the media, because – you know as well as I do, there may not be a human resources department necessarily within the structure of the baseball league, but at the same time, there are avenues for a player to go in, file a grievance, and go the proper way, and even do it anonymously if they wanted to really, point to somebody who they feel is not playing the game the way it's supposed to be, or if they feel there should be an investigation or somebody looking at a certain situation. And that's the thing that kind of it intrigues me a little bit about Mike Fiers, because, you know, it is pretty ballsy to go out there and put your name to something like this, because obviously it's gained a lot of steam and grown a lot larger than probably even he anticipated. And I think the question for me is, why are we hearing from him in 2019 through a media source instead of through 2017 with an inside the clubhouse struggle, or maybe he reaches out to somebody in the union to file a grievance and say, hey, I think things are going on here that shouldn't be. You know, I feel like there were other avenues to go. Publicly into the media is the only thing I really question about what Mike Fiers did. But the fact of the matter is it's out there, and he's got to show up in a major league clubhouse where there might be a little more scrutiny on him now, knowing that he's been the one that blew the whistle.
Mm. Jeff Blum is a former Astro, longtime Major League Baseball player with us here after hours on CBS Sports Radio. You're now with the team as a TV analyst, and so you're around them all the time. Did you know this was happening in 2017?
Absolutely not. I wish I could tell you that I had some insight into what was going on, because I do have a very good relationship with Jeff Luhnow. I have a great, even better relationship with AJ Hinch. But at the same time, my job is to cover the team on the field as I see it. I don't have the opportunity to be in the dugout and really see what in-game situation is going on as far as the clubhouse or the dugout is going on. So a lot of what I was seeing was just reactionary, much like a fan, you know, obviously sitting in a booth, you know, 200-300 feet above the field, my headset's on. We do have field mics, but at the same time, I can have those turned off, and we don't necessarily get the same feed that fans are getting at home, because I've got my partner, Todd Callis, talking to me. I've got my stage manager yelling at me on what promo to read, and then I've got my producer yelling at me. Telling me what, instant replay is coming back or what graphic we're about to talk to. So it's pretty involved up in the booth. And I think it's one of those situations where literally nobody knew about it until we were pointed in that direction and actually had an opportunity to focus on some of the audio to pick that up. So I was kind of in the majority as far as, you know, having the wool pulled over our eyes, so to speak. And it's not something I go into the clubhouse and go, hey, how are you guys going to trick the system today? You know, I'm more intent on getting analysis as far as gameplay and the day-to-day mechanics of a baseball team.
So now knowing that this was going on during the 2017 World Series run, which was the first in Astros history, it was such an incredible time for the city of Houston and the region. Now knowing that this was happening, what are your feelings about it?
It's painful, to be honest with you, because as much as I work for the Houston Astros, I'm still a fan, and I really, you know, I enjoyed watching the transition from a team that was struggling to a team that was competing to a team that was a World Series championship caliber ball club. So I did become a little more attached to this ball club in 2017. You know, it was my first full season of calling games. I got to be around the guys. I got to be in the community, and I became a fan of what these guys were doing because it was so remarkable. And then we had Hurricane Harvey hit, and we saw the reaction from the players in the community really reaching out and becoming a part of the community. And there was that really galvanizing moment where we saw the community of Houston attach itself to a professional sports team in the Houston Astros. And, of course, the Astros go on and win the World Series. And all of a sudden, there was a great deal of pride. It took a lot of the sting and the pain and, you know, the rebuilding of some of these communities to be able to watch and become a part of the Astros championship run. And I think that's where the players really need to step up now, is to reach out, apologize, and gain the trust of the fans back, because they did tarnish what was a magical year in 2017 with what they've done.
The players, as you mentioned, have been granted immunity in exchange for their candor and their honesty in this investigation. The hammer dropped hard on the general manager and on the manager, in this case, Jeff Luhnow and AJ Hinch. In your opinion, is that the right way to do it? Or should the players bear some responsibility for what was happening?
I do, and there's been a lot of talk, and I kind of agree with it in a sense, you know, and a lot of this comes from reading the report. You know, I don't have the opportunity yet to get into the clubhouse and talk to some of these guys and really see what was going on and maybe see the remorse in their eyes. But for what I have right now in front of me is reading that report, and a lot of what the report said, and granted, it's written by a couple of attorneys in the Department of Investigation for Major League Baseball, so it's going to be a little skewed towards the owner's side mm-hmm. or towards the commissioner's side. But everything pointed to the players disregarding what management was maybe implying. We heard this, you know, A.J. Hinch didn't necessarily say stop stealing signs the way you are, but he went down there and broke two monitors that they were using to steal the signs, saying it was a distraction, saying it was taking up too much of their time and they should be focusing on the game kind of thing. So you would think that actions would speak louder than words, but in this case, when you need the actual evidence or you need a witness to, you know, to comply with what was going on, you didn't get that. So that's where A.J. became at fault. But the way I read the report, it really seemed as if the players knew they had immunity, told the story, and eventually it came back on Jeff Luhnow and A.J. Hinch because of what Rob Manfred said about it in 2017.
Right. We know that. We know that the commissioner very explicitly said the general manager, the manager are going to be held responsible if I find out that you are running afoul of this particular rule. Jeff Blum is with the Astros as a TV analyst, as a former Astro himself, a longtime Major League Baseball player. I appreciate a couple of minutes. We're going to take a quick break. And then, Jeff, I want to ask you, because you stood in countless batters' boxes facing pitches, how much does it matter if you know that an off-speed pitch is coming? That's straight ahead. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Virtually all of us see this organization as a family. That feeling was operating yesterday in making a tough decision. It operates throughout the organization daily. And it's how we approach holding each other accountable and to the highest standards with the highest goals.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
A lot of statements around Major League Baseball about integrity and the values that organizations hold dear. And in the wake of the elaborate electronic sign-stealing scheme that was exposed in 2017 with the Astros, we've now had three different baseball managers fire as well as a GM, and it's been a stunning week for the game. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We appreciate former Astro, longtime baseball vet, and current Astros employee. Jeff Blum works for the Astros as their TV analyst for their game broadcasts, and he's with us for a few more minutes here on CBS Sports Radio. Jeff, I've never stood in a batter's box. I've never faced big league pitching. But if you know someone is banging on a trash can, letting you know that a particular pitch is coming, an off-speed pitch is coming, how much of an advantage does that give you as a hitter?
The game is evolving, and I am more than happy to recognize that in this day and age, the players are bigger, faster, stronger, throwing harder than anything I'd ever seen. I retired in 2012, and I remember that was really the beginning of the uptick of where you started to see more guys throwing 97, 99, 100 miles an hour. And the game had passed me up, and I knew it was time for me to start watching some baseball. But what I want everybody to know is, yes, there were plenty of times where I knew which pitch was coming, and it helped me sometimes, it didn't help me sometimes. But it was definitely, as far as the mentality of hitting, it did give me a little more confidence knowing that I had a better opportunity to try and get a hit, knowing which pitch was coming. And I think that's what's a little bit different from the era I played in with the steroids, where, you know, the steroids made you bigger and stronger and maybe a little bit quicker, but you still had to figure out which pitch was coming and react to it. Whereas opposed to now, the signal, you know, the sign stealing, and this is the real issue, is that you get a leg up and you get into the mind of the pitcher and you can anticipate, and that's where the issue kind of sets in. But the game has changed so much where back, you know, I hate saying this, but back in my day, you had a half second maybe to see the baseball and react, whereas opposed to now with the velocity that these guys are pitching at and the movement they're able to create, you know, you knock that down to 0.4 seconds, 0.3 seconds, and you really need as much knowledge as you can get to try and combat that. It's just unfortunate the Astros took it to the next level and got busted for it.
It's interesting that you bring up the steroid era, because a lot of fans are comparing these two, I get tired of the word scandal, but these two situations. Mm-hmm. When you think about this last week and what we found out, do you think it compares to the prevalence of PED usage in the time that you were playing?
You know, there are some parallels to it. And I think, you know, I tried to, you know, that last little bit where I tried to explain, you know, the difference between what these two entities are doing or how they try to figure out an advantage in the game.
Sure.
But, you know, it's still a situation for me where Major League Baseball, as far as commissioners and owners, were a little bit behind the curve in the evolution of the game. You know, back in 1994, the steroid era was brought on because they needed to bring fans back to the game. And all
right.
of a sudden, these guys started juicing, the money started flowing, and all of a sudden, you know, there were other players around the league that were going, wait a minute, we're glad that people are watching baseball, but at the same time, these guys are getting rewarded for doing something that, you know, the federal government finds illegal on steroids. This isn't fair, and that's how we got to the, you know, the drug testing program that we have now. And now we're in a similar situation where technology was introduced, the analytics, there was a big thrill about how this was really going to bring some of the younger crowd into the game of baseball. And, you know, it was a missed opportunity in 2017 for Rob Manfred to really, you know, lay down the law with the Yankees and Red Sox situation. And here we are with them abusing the ability to have technology that close to the dugout.
It's funny, and I've said this on the air. I mean, sign stealing is as old as the game itself. I remember I only
yes.
played softball in high school and college, but I certainly remember we were always trying to figure out the other team's signs, obviously. So that part I would expect would still be, almost an element of gamesmanship. How prevalent do you believe it is, or maybe was, using the technology until the Astros and Red Sox got caught?
I would imagine having the invention of replay in Major League Baseball brought the opportunity to have a room or a segment of your organization really focus on the replay of the game. And a lot of what replay is, you know, watching from the center field camera, and then you're able to position cameras around your stadiums to be able to get key replay angles in to help your ball club win some of the replay challenges. And obviously it enhances the umpire's ability to see him back in New York. But I think in doing so, you also opened up Pandora's box for some of these guys internally to look at these replays, or maybe look at some of the camera angles that you don't see on TV and really enhance them. And they said, wow, I've got a great view of what the signs the catchers are giving right now. I think we could really use this to our advantage. And you start to pick up on some of the sequences. Maybe you have an algorithm or software that can, you know, you can punch some numbers into, and it'll give you maybe what they're trying to do. So I think that that's where you kind of, you know, you tinkered on the edge, and then you got some guys that were really creative on the technical side and said, hey, I've got an idea, and here we are.
Hmm. I am a huge fan of A.J. Hinch. I mean, that's been one of the hardest things for me is because I am such a huge fan of his, and I view him as a man and a manager of integrity. Now the Astros are moving forward without him. It seems it's just the whole thing just seems so strange. But where does the organization go? I mean, what happens now? How do you get out from under this?
I think it's pretty interesting, and I know that you've read the same articles I have as far as what the Astros are doing as far as a managerial search.
Sure.
And just, you know, the news right now is that Joe Espada, the bench coach for the last 2 years, is the interim manager who's been interviewed several times for several managing opportunities in baseball. I think he's a capable manager. It's just a matter of, I think that the only knock maybe against Joe Espada is that he's so close to the situation. And does Jim Crane, who's right now basically running this entire team on the business and baseball ops side, is he too close to the situation and he doesn't want Joe to represent his Houston Astros because he is so close to the situation? But I think Joe's a great guy because he's bilingual. He can communicate with Latin and American players. He's got a great rapport with them. He already has the built-in trust moving forward, and he doesn't want to be associated with what they're doing. He wants to move forward with a new opportunity. But you see guys like Buck Showalter, John Gibbons. You know, Buck Showalter is a guy who's straight edge, straight and narrow, almost militant to a point. And, you know, would he be able to clean up the atmosphere because of his reputation? And then you've got John Gibbons, who came in, who's an unbelievable communicator and a great relational guy as far as working with guys in the clubhouse, who has won some ball games in the past and has a great reputation. And then I believe Will Venable, the young third base coach, who I actually met in 2007 with the San Diego Padres, he went to an Ivy League school. He's intelligent, played for 9 years, first base coach, third base coach for the Cubs under Joe Maddon. So he's going to get consideration tomorrow, and he's going to be a young guy that maybe appeals to Jim Crane in the sense that this is a young guy, new face, new blood. Let's let him move forward. But, you know as well as I do, whoever moves into this position is getting the keys to a Ferrari, even though there is that scandal looming over them.
Yes.
They're getting the keys of the Ferrari because these guys are still in Vegas, being counted on to win almost 100 games.
Mm. So before I let you go, do you think this was the right thing? Did this have to happen for the Astros to be able to turn the page, the moves that Jim Crane made?
I think so. It's unfortunate. But, if you're – man, that's a really tough call. And you already mentioned that. I do work for the Astros, so I've got to pick my words carefully. But, I think when you are trying to establish a new culture, you do kind of have to you do have to eliminate what's at top, because sometimes it trickles from the top down, as it should be. And the responsible parties in this case, unfortunately, even though they weren't as aware as they thought they were of the situation that was going on underneath them, leadership, when you assume that position and when you take that role, you know that there are going to be consequences for decisions made, and now we know for decisions that are not made. And as much as I love AJ Hinch, as much as I love working for Jeff Luhnow, those were the guys that were unfortunately in the position to take the fall for the situation that was created in that clubhouse. But that is the joy of leadership is winning it all, and the pain of leadership is understanding that you're responsible for those under you.
Mm. Jeff Blum is a former Astro, former World Series champ, now with Astros TV, and kind enough to answer my questions and kind of give us an understanding of how Major League Baseball players view this. Jeff, it's been really good to talk to you, and I know it's not under the greatest circumstances, but I'm sure we will be talking about Astros baseball again soon, so thank you so much.
Yeah, I would enjoy talking some baseball moving forward. But, these conversations, even for me, just thinking about it right now, they're a little therapeutic to kind of get some of these thoughts and ideas out there. And hopefully we can move past this. Thank you.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.